Kyle Malin, the editor of the MERS newsletter. Kyle, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm glad I didn't decide to plant my vegetables out in the garden.
You know, we've heard a lot of people talking about that, Kyle. Who was it? Someone asked me about that yesterday. They were concerned about the farmers who may have planted already, and were expecting frost. There was frost last night, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, I was worried about that. You know, I was going to, but luckily I got a smarter person in this house beside me. My wife telling me, no, you're not going to want to do that because it's still March, Kyle. It's still March.
See, you don't want to do that. You don't want to get on the radio and brag about that because she's going to hear about that and see, say, I told you so, and tell all your friends that, and that's going to make you look bad.
Oh, no, I don't worry about that. It's just par for the course.
All right, quote of the day on the MERS newsletter. Here it goes, and I quote, "If I tell you, I'd have to kill you because they'd kill me." That's Senator Mike Green when asked to identify the 6 or 7 legislators who carry licensed concealed weapons, adding that those who carry do so to protect themselves, not to show off. And that's somewhat humorous, but I know that there is a bill, or perhaps more than one bill, allowing a little bit greater freedom with where you can carry concealed weapons.
Yeah, that's right. Currently, you can't carry concealed weapons into churches, schools, big arenas, stadiums, hospitals. And there's a bill out there right now that would cancel all those exceptions out. And there is a lot of support for it. And there was hope by Mike Green, a state senator out of Mayville, which is over in the Thumb region, to get some movement on that bill. And there is some support in the House as well. But it doesn't look like that's going to go this week, which is the last week before the 2-week spring recess. But I would keep an eye on that because, you know, this is the type of legislature that would go forward with something like that. I don't know how that, I haven't seen polling on it, so I don't know how it would do with the public. But obviously among conservatives, it's something that would be very, very popular.
Tell me about the Oakland County Commission redistricting plan that was pushed through the legislature at the end of 2011, and apparently the Michigan Supreme Court said that it was constitutional.
Well, and you know, this is one of those subjects where people are like, "No, why would folks in Ingham County care about the county commission districts of Oakland County?" You know, it just kind of seems like a side issue. And the reason why folks in Ingham County might care is that it is probably the most political thing this legislature and this governor and now the Supreme Court have gotten themselves into. Back, I would say around September of last year, the Republicans in the legislature in the Oakland County delegation in particular started working on a bill that would redraw the districts of Oakland County for its county commission. And the reason they were doing that is because for the first time in, I don't know, anybody's memory, the Oakland County Commission districts had been drawn by a panel that was now controlled by the Democrats. And it consisted of the treasurer and the prosecutor and the clerk. And two of those three were Democrats. And the panel also included the county chairs of the Republican and Democratic Party. Well, anyway, they drew maps that favored the Democrats, allegedly. And Brooks Patterson, who's the chair of the Republican, the Oakland County Executive, didn't like it at all. And so he got the legislature and Governor Rick Snyder to pass a bill that changed the process retroactively. And now we'll have the Oakland County Commission redraw those districts. Now, what is it, March 23, and start redrawing those districts. And conceivably, since that commission is run by Republicans or a majority of Republicans, will draw new districts that favor Republicans. Now, they were able to get away with it because what they did in the process is they reduced the number of commissioners that serve and changed, you know, the panel of who doesn't. But in making the decision, I mean, really, it was a completely partisan move, I think, on the Republicans. I don't think anybody would really deny it. But, you know, it follows the golden rule. I mean, those who have the gold make the rules, and in this case, the Republicans have the rules, and the Democrats are going to be making a lot of hay about it. I would expect Mark Brewer, the chair of the Democratic Party, to be bringing this to people's attention in the form of campaign ads on the Supreme Court with Stephen Markman and Brian Zara later this year.
In a story also on the front page of the MERS newsletter, you talk about the chaotic public meeting that resulted in financial stress, no consent agreement. I watched the video from that meeting, and it was. I'm a little curious, though, not that I support the government taking over an entity, but I'm a little bit curious why people are so shocked that this is going to happen and why they keep putting up such a fight and why they expect the taxpayers to continue to pump money into this situation when, since Dennis Archer was mayor, the city has proven that the people that they elect to lead them and to spend their money are incompetent. They cannot do it on their own, and they need help, but yet they keep fighting. Even at this meeting, there was heckles when they were trying to find resolution. What's your take on this story?
Well, and you know what, Tony? I mean, my initial reaction is the same as yours, and you really have to go into Detroit and kind of get into their mentality, their mindset, to understand why they're in the situation they are in. You know, they really got bottled into contracts and their employee contracts that are very, very favorable to employees and retirees, and has created legacy costs in that city that are just out of this world. And, the folks down there really have a genuine fear that state government feels like they know better than the city of Detroit what's going on. And after the Detroit school takeover back in the Engler years, they're really skeptical about Lansing. And when I say Lansing, you know, the capital area in general. And they really feel like there's a big brother, little brother scenario going on. And that's what I think they fear right now. They feel like they can take care of their own problems, thank you very much. And they really don't, and they really feel like the state is condescending and that Detroit can't figure it out themselves. The problem is that they're so far into it, though, Tony, like you said. It's so bad that unless you have some type of emergency manager powers where you can cancel union contracts and really start making the big changes, it's hard to get it done. It really is.
Kyle, what's the latest with the cyber school bill?
Well, it looks like they may actually have the votes to pass a cyber school expansion this week in the House, Tony. That's been held up in the House for a couple months now because there's several Republicans in the House that are kind of hesitant to pass an all-out, no-limits expansion to what we call cyber schools, where kids K through 12 can learn online. Now, the compromise that I've heard is that they're going to limit the number to 15 or so. Right now it's 2. So they just bump up the cap, and then they're going to limit the amount of students who can participate in like a charter cyber school. But they'll still let kids who have a cyber school option through their own school their own public school district in ISD still take classes.
We're talking with Kyle Mullen, who's the editor of the MERS newsletter. MERS is Michigan's oldest and most comprehensive newsletter covering the activities of the Michigan state government. Kyle, we haven't heard much about this when it first, when discussion of this bill came up. There was quite a bit of interest. The statewide auto no fault, there's a town hall meeting on the 28th.
Yeah, there is some, there's still a lot of talk about the no-fault system because, well, there's a few things going on. First of all, we're going to end up paying another $30 extra on our car insurance bill because the Catastrophic Claims Association fee is going up. You know, and that fee goes to cover folks who are seriously, seriously injured in car accidents, and the injuries and the coverage of the injuries go over $500,000, and this fund like takes care of the expenses after that, and so it just has given more rise to the fact that is this fund really sustainable? Because today isn't like 20 years ago. I mean, we're actually able to save lives and keep people alive longer because of advanced technology. But the problem is that technology costs so much money, and can the system support that type of, expansion? I mean, what is the limit? Is there a limit? And at what point are drivers going to say, you know what, this fee is nice and this coverage is nice, but we just can't afford it anymore. And if I want to pay, you know, the extra cash, I should be given the option to do so. So the Republicans are trying to pass a bill that would create this kind of like cap system. But obviously there's a lot of concerns. I mean, because it all sounds well and good that we're going to try and save some extra bucks until you're the one who gets caught in this situation, or your family member, or your child all of a sudden is you know, catastrophically injured and, you know, has severe brain damage, and, you know, how are you going to pay for it? And it's not really the situation you want to be in. I mean, that's very traumatic. And so, you know, it's just been a give and take. And again, the Republicans in the House are really torn on it. And it's not moving. And in the meantime, the governor has said we need some type of cap system, you know, being the CPA he is. And so what he's done is he's linked any form to this this no-fault system to the helmet law, the motorcycle helmet law. Well, the Republicans in the Senate are tired of waiting on the House on this no-fault stuff, and they're going to send Governor Snyder the motorcycle helmet repeal bill this week. So it'll be interesting to see what the governor does with this bill. Like I said, he's wanted to tie it to no fault. No fault ain't moving as far as we can tell. So we'll see what he does.
And Kyle, speaking of bills on the governor's desk, I'm still interested to know what he would do if a bill... there's been a menagerie of bills that we've been asking if the governor would sign.
Yeah, right.
And we can't get any comment on that, even though he says he didn't want them on his desk. So
yeah, the right to work.
Right to work is one of them. And a lot of people are wondering if it shows up, and if you weren't the one pushing it, really, would you sign it or not?
Well, and the reason he doesn't answer it, Tony, is because that ignites more debate, more fuel for a debate that he just simply doesn't want to have, because it sucks the oxygen out of the room. You know, the second he says, yes, I will sign it, the unions will go bananas. And then the right-to-work activists will say, see, we told you so. And then they put pressure on the Senate with Senate Majority Leader Randy Richardville, who doesn't want a right-to-work bill. And, you know, it just creates a problem. So he's just going to keep on punting, man. He's just going to do it.
Enjoy your day, Kyle.
Hey, thanks, Tony.